I want to talk about peace tonight. We all know what it is. Except about 2 hours ago, I didn't think I did. I was kind of in a panic because I was going to the suttas and some of the authors that I know and trying to find something definitive about peace. And I wasn't finding it. Not for like 3 days. And I had a bunch of notes that I'd taken, but they didn't add up to a Dharma talk. And I thought, well, I'm just going to go in there and blush and say, well, you know what it is. But then I went back to my original notion, which was, we really do know what it is. It's sort of this lofty goal. I mean, it's the title of so many books about Buddhism, the path to peace and tranquility and insight, and they're talking about it. So what is there to say about it? There are three main experiences of peace that one runs into during the course of a Buddhist practice. And the first one is the one that I'm sure you're all familiar with, and that is when you just happen to be in a peaceful state of mind. Who knows why? I mean, maybe there are very good reasons. Maybe it's your second day on vacation. You're all unpacked. You have all the food you need. You don't really have to do anything except chill. And this great sigh comes out of you, and you know you're at peace. Or plenty of other moments when you just happen to feel peaceful. It's experienced in the mind, in the heart, and in the body. Or mind or heart or body or all of them, depending on what your experience is. In terms of practice, peace is a factor of mindfulness. It's one of the reasons why most of us started doing this. It's the reason why psychotherapists all over the world are sending people to sanghas to learn how to meditate. Because as we cultivate mindfulness, we also cultivate tranquility or serenity or, let's see, calm, composure, stillness, being undisturbed, pleasure, all words that get thrown into this category. And in fact, this can be the sum and the goal of one's practice, is to just get to that point where that you get that sigh, that feeling of letting go of the world, just being at peace. Just a little mental and emotional quiet in your life. Peace is one of the factors of enlightenment as well as mindfulness. It's one of the calming factors. Again, it's translated into English as one of these words, serenity, tranquility, peace. The Pali word is pasadi. As with mindfulness, it's talked about in the suttas as the result of the states that precede it, sort of progressing toward mindfulness or nirvana. enlightenment. There's a really close association between peace and concentration. And as you build toward mindfulness, there needs to be the establishment of some degree of concentration. And then there'll be this serenity that kicks in as a result of concentration. Why? Well, because when you are concentrating, you've let go of the thoughts that agitate all people, us. So by having a concentrated mind, one that's just for these moments aware only of the sensations of breathing, we're not going off about our boss or the neighbor or our partner or someone we wish would be our partner or whatever it is. We're just watching the breath. The mind is on vacation. It's very easy, and there's nothing going on that's disturbing. Now, concentration is a practice in itself. In fact, it's often seen as an alternative practice to Vipassana, which is what my instructions are all about every time I teach. In order to practice mindfulness or Vipassana, you need that amount of concentration to bring the mind together, to get it to clear, so that you can see what happens and not be totally distracted by it. You can stay present with whatever arises. When you increase the amount of concentration, then you don't get to watch what arises, because you're just staying with the sensations of breathing or whatever else you've picked as the focus of your concentration. Usually it's breathing, but some people use metta practice. They concentrate on the phrases and say them over and over, and that unifies the mind. Basically, concentration practice is called jhana practice. There are four states, four material states of deep concentration. And in the literature, they're often talked about as bliss states, but they're not necessarily. And now I just want to say that, you know, this isn't fantasy. It really is an experience that people have of keeping the mind on target long enough that no longer is any effort necessary. It just stays there. And on the way, a couple of factors arise. The first one is rapture. And I'll get emails from people all the time with saying, I had the sensation that I was levitating, or that there were sparks running up and down my spine. And I need to ask them a few follow-up questions to find out if they're hallucinating or, you know, just having powerful visualizations. But very often what's happened is that they have fallen into some fairly deep concentration, and this energy is released in the mind and the body, and it's experienced as a very physical phenomenon. Well, there are all different categories of them, and it's a whole subject in and of itself. Another factor that arises is happiness. The Pali word is sukha, and it's very close to pleasure or gladness, or it's not about something that's happened. It's just a buoyant feeling. It's different than the rapture. Sort of initially, you don't get to either the rapture or the sukha without guiding the mind and holding it onto the object of concentration. But at a certain point, you're guiding the mind, it's staying there, there's rapture, there's sukha. At that point, there's this entrance into the first jhana. And when the guiding thinking drops off, there's an entrance into the second jhana. Then the rapture drops off, and the sukha drops off. In the fourth jhana, all there is peace. Just this empty awareness. I found an article by Ajahn Brahm. It's called Mindfulness, Bliss, and Beyond. And here's what he has to say about the fourth jhana. When the bliss subsides, all that is left is the profound peace that's the hallmark of the fourth jhana. From the perspective of the fourth jhana, the previous bliss is seen as a residual movement of the mental object. In other words, there's still some activity going on in the mind, so it's not that peaceful. It becomes what he calls an affliction, obscuring something much greater. So when that bliss subsides, all that is left is the profound peace. Nothing moves in this jhana, nothing glows, nothing experiences happiness or discomfort. One feels perfect balance in the very center of the mind. As in the center of a cyclone, nothing stirs in the center of the mind's eye. There is a sense of perfection here, a perfection of stillness and of awareness. The Buddha described it as a purification of mindfulness, just looking on. Though rapture and sukha have both ceased by the time you get to the fourth jhana, and all that is left is the perfection of peace, such an experience is later recognized upon reviewing as supremely delightful. The perfect peace of the fourth jhana is seen as the best bliss so far. It is the bliss of no more bliss. This is not playing with words, trying to sound clever or mystical. This is how it is. So that's a pretty powerful association with concentration. And it's also, for those who have experienced it, a very powerful motivation to continue practicing. And usually, the way that one continues practicing, having experienced the jhanas, is to return to mindfulness, to use the techniques of mindfulness to delve quite deeply into some of the deepest truths of the Buddhist teachings, such as impermanence, suffering, and no self, no separate self. So we have this peace that we encounter in mindfulness, and this peace that can be encountered in concentration. It's also the ultimate state of the enlightened mind, when we're free of all distractions, all greed, hatred, or ignorance. Nibbana is when we're free of all of the causes of suffering. And the way that we get rid of them is by using whatever amount of concentration we have at our disposal with a peaceful mind to see what takes us away from our serenity. What comes up in meditation that is so seductive that we give up that peace? And then we notice, when we return to mindfulness, we notice what we've been thinking, how it's made us feel, and we want to know, why did it have that power? Where did that power come from? And just by investigating it, it's like we undercut the root of a weed, and it is rooted out. And we do that with all of the sources of our suffering, and eventually they're all gone. And that's Nibbana. So, peace is a hard thing to pin down in practice. It's not a practice in and of itself, but it's laced through the practice and the goal, so to speak. And it's highly regarded in all religions. Most of them, one of the kindest things you can wish someone is, peace be with you. You definitely know it when you feel it. So, who has a memory at some point of feeling peaceful? Actually, why don't we all take a moment now and cast the memory back to a time of feeling peaceful. Remember what that felt like. And see if it becomes a present experience. And when you're done with that investigation, just let your eyes open naturally. I love to talk about a survey when they asked people to remember the happiest moment of their lives. And then they followed up with asking them to pick a moment in which they would want to spend eternity. And those were usually two very different moments. And I proposed that peace is the moment that the people were choosing in that second question. Now, the odd thing about peace in our daily lives is that we can have it in the midst of turmoil. And if you look at that, you'll see that it has a close association with equanimity, which is, if I had to pick one word for it, it would be acceptance. It's finding a balance with whatever is going on. In the past week, I've had two discussions with people that they noticed in a meditation session that people were coming in late and not being considerate, which I'm very happy to report didn't happen tonight. But it's something that people in meditation will sometimes notice, and it can be very annoying. The thing that was interesting about these discussions was that both of these people reported that they had no feeling of aversion arise, even though their mind was saying, that person is being inconsiderate. The thought came up, they shouldn't be rattling that bag. Or the thought came up, they shouldn't be walking so fast or so loud. Still, the people who talked about this experience said that they were at peace, that in the meditation they had achieved enough, what's the word? Well, serenity, tranquility, that even with these aversive thoughts coming up, they didn't go with it. They were able to just notice the thoughts go through and let them pass away. So it is a pretty accepting state of mind. And in my own practice, I use that as a kind of North Star. That's where I aim my life to stay on course. Can I be at peace with what's happening? If I'm not at peace, just as in meditation, I sort of automatically ask, why not? I mean, the first achievement is to recognize it. I'm not at peace. There, my stomach's tense, my jaw is clenched. I'm having a lot of aversive or greedy thoughts. What's going on? So I look for the causes, just as I do in mindfulness meditation, and I investigate. And when that's done, then I go back to trying to cultivate the factors that give rise to peace and mindfulness. Buddha says, to the mind that is still, the whole universe surrenders. It is possible when we're at peace, when we're paying attention in an accepting manner, to not be thrown, no matter how much the horse is bucking. What I'm talking about is what the mind, the heart, the body feels as a result of mindfulness and equanimity. And I wish it for you all, not just now during the holiday season, but for all time. Peace be with you.